as Jason mentioned earlier, the theme today is moving from rows to circles. And the reason we're emphasizing this theme today, and actually in the preceding weeks as we've talked about signing up and getting in small groups, the reason we're emphasizing this is because we believe, that is, the leaders of the church, we deeply believe that life change happens in circles, not in rows. Generally, when you gather together for church on Sundays, we come in the door and we're herded into rows, and we're all looking forward, we're seeking God, and we're looking that way, and that's really primarily the goal. But at some point, we need to move from rows into circles. It's important that we connect on a deeper level. All of us have heard the story of Robinson Crusoe, that obstinate English boy who refused to take his father's advice to become a member of the clergy, but instead decided that he wanted to go out to sea. And so he runs off and boards the ship, and not long after his seafaring days begin, of course, a storm comes, and the ship is lost, and he washes ashore on a deserted island. He manages to salvage enough things from the ship to build himself a makeshift home and a bit of a life for himself, but he's very miserable. And despite living in a very idyllic situation, he's lonely and he's terribly miserable. This is what he said. I'm cast upon a horrible, desolate island, void of all hope of recovery. I'm singled out and separated, as it were, from all the world to be miserable. I'm divided from mankind, a solitaire, one banished from human history. I have no soul to speak to or relieve me. And the reason, of course, for his misery had nothing to do with his setting, the climate, the food, the view. It was because he was all alone. And the sad thing today is that there are millions of people who are all alone amidst a sea of people, right? So many people are all alone. And they feel miserable. And they feel isolated. And maybe that's you. Over the past 50 years, the share of U.S. households consisting of one person has more than doubled. It's now the second most common household type, well ahead of married couples with minor children. Living alone is the second most common household type, especially in large cities. According to an article in Slate magazine, it said loneliness has doubled. 40% of adults in two recent surveys said that they were lonely. Do you ever feel lonely? You feel alone? According to a 2018 survey in The Economist, the Kaiser Family Foundation, they found that over 20% of adults said they often feel left out or isolated. You feel like you're on the outside looking in. And people have lives and yours is outside of that. Another survey said that over half of Americans feel that no one knows them well. No one knows them well. Oh, we have a face that we put forward. We put it on Facebook, perhaps. And maybe even something that we share when we're with our friends. But we feel as though no one ever gets behind the mask to really know us. And so we're with people, but we're still alone. It's epidemic loneliness. And tragically, it's not only widespread, it's also deadly. Psychiatrists for a long time have told us of the psychological and psychiatric effect of being alone. It leads to all types of disorders, of depression, even schizophrenia, even hallucinations, when you're alone, being isolated. But the most recent research describes how loneliness affects our physical bodies as well. In 2015, researchers at the UCLA discovered that Social isolation triggers cellular changes that result in chronic inflammation, predisposing lonely people to serious physical conditions and diseases. And I want you to listen and pay attention because this is very serious. And it affects not only those of us that are here, but the people we know and love, the people that live near us, those we're trying to reach with the gospel. This is very real. Dr. Richard Swartz, a Cambridge psychiatrist, he studied the problem of loneliness in America, and he notes that over four decades of studies have shown that loneliness has been linked to cardiovascular disease and stroke and the progression of Alzheimer's disease. He continued to say, one study found the health risks of loneliness can be as much as long-term smoking, and it's twice as dangerous, they say, as obesity. Oh, we all know the health effects of those types of things, but research is beginning to show loneliness has tremendous effects upon our physical health. In 2015, a huge study using data from 3.5 million people collected over 35 years found that those who fall into categories of loneliness, isolation, or simply living on their own, listen, they risk premature death by nearly one-third higher rate when they're alone or feel isolated or feel lonely. And no wonder Caruso was so miserable. And no wonder, listen, no wonder the number one fear of young people today is loneliness. The research shows the number one fear of young people today is loneliness. It's ahead of being jobless. In fact, the research shows that 42% of millennial women are more afraid of loneliness than of a cancer diagnosis. Loneliness is a problem. So do you feel alone? Do you feel isolated? Do you feel like no one really knows you? It may be true of you, but the problem is we don't want to admit that. It's hard to admit. Again, the researcher, Dr. Schwartz, he said, admitting you're lonely feels very much like admitting you're a loser. People are comfortable saying they're depressed, but they're not comfortable saying they're lonely because you're the kid sitting alone in the cafeteria. That's why we need to move from rows to circles. We need to remove the masks. We need to be connected deeply to one another. Not only because we need it, but because God is glorified in our relationships with one another. So I simply want to take a few moments as we prepare for communion today to remind you of two basic biblical truths about community. And the first is what you all know, what we know experientially, and even in terms of Bible knowledge, and that is that we were created for community. That's why it's such a problem. It's because that's what we're made for. We're made to be in deep community and relationship, to be in intimacy with other people. We're created in the image of the Trinitarian Godhead. We're made to know and be known, to love and be loved. And first and foremost, right, to know God. And to know Him personally, not to know about Him. And when we know Him, then that God-shaped vacuum in us is filled, right? And nothing else can fill that but God. So here's a question, though, I want to ask you. That is absolutely true, right? That only God can fill that vacuum in our hearts. But here's the question. Is God all we really need? And when we say that, right, we even sing it. All I need is you, Jesus, all I need is you. Is that really true? On one level, yes, it is true. But a distortion of that teaching is not true. Certainly God alone can meet our needs and fulfill our lives. No possession, no position. Nothing in life can do that except God. But God uses intermediaries, a variety of intermediaries, to meet those needs. He's the source, but he uses other means. I just think, for example, of food. A person can say, all I need is God. I don't need to eat. God's all I need. And God could have created us without the need to eat something. He could have given us, you know, some kind of heavenly IV drip or something, or some kind of ever-ready battery that never runs down. He could have done that, but he didn't. And he meets our needs. He's the one who does it, but we need to eat. And take another example, sleep. All I need is God, but I'll tell you, if I don't get a few nights of sleep, it doesn't feel very good. Life is hard, right? And so here's the deal. We need God, but he created us to need other people. And that's what we have to understand. Just go back to the creation account for a moment. Think back to Genesis 1. God created the heavens and the earth. And 7 times in the first 2 chapters, he's creating and he's saying over and over, it is good. It is good. It is good. And then you probably know this, right? Something happens in chapter 2. Once he's done, he's rested, everything's there. And then he says, finally, it's not good. And we know this, right? It was not good. He said, it's not good for the man to be alone. Now stop and think about that for a few moments. Let that sink in. Adam lived in a perfect world. There's no sin. He lives in a setting where he has intimacy with God. No one since Adam has ever had a relationship with God like he had. To walk with God in the cool of the day. He has God. He has this relationship with God. He has everything he needs. He has significance. He's been given the responsibility to care for the garden, to name the animals. He has all this significance and everything. And yet, God said, it's not good that he's alone. I need to make a helper for him. And my friends, I want you to let that sink in every time, especially when you begin to think, I don't really need other people. I don't need to be connected to other people deeply. Because God made us to be connected to him and to other people. You might think of it, as some have called it, kind of simply put, like the Lego principle. Now, if you have kids or grandkids, you probably have Legos around the house. You know what they are? They're just blocks that are made to connect. And that's what we are. We're made to connect. You connect on top and on the bottom. Connect to God, and you connect to other people. And Lego blocks come in all shapes, sizes, colors. And when you're connected, boy, you can make all kinds of wonderful things. And the same is true for us. When we're connected to God and other people, God moves in powerful ways. So just a simple reminder that we are created for community. And it should not surprise us then, secondly, to remind you of this, that the church is a community. The church is about relationships. Our mission, Jesus gave it to us. It's very clear. We didn't make it up. We don't decide what we're here to do. We're here to make disciples. And discipleship is essentially a journey toward relationship with God and with other people. That's what it is. It's a journey of knowing God, knowing him more fully, and knowing other people. Think of the ministry of Jesus with the early disciples. What did he say? Come and follow me. And for 3 years, he spent time with them, and he loved them, and he poured himself into them, and he cared for them, and he taught them, and instructed them, and he changed them from being fishers of fish to being fishers of men. And then after 3 years, when his time had come, it says in John 13, verse 1, it was just before the Passover feast. Jesus knew that the time had come for him to leave this world and to go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he now showed them the full extent of his love. And he was with them and he loved them. And he demonstrated that love by taking off his garment, putting on an apron and washing their feet. And then that night, the last night he was with them, he gave them an instruction, a command. He said it was a new command. And he said, A new command I give you, love one another as I have loved you, so you must love one another. And why did he say that? Because he was teaching them and reminding them that first and foremost, it was about their relationship with himself and with one another, and they're to love each other. In fact, he said, by this all men will know you're my disciples, your love for one another. You see, listen, think about this. Jesus is telling us that the hallmark of his people, is our relationships. Now think about the opportunity we have today in this world of division and hostility, hatred. You're afraid to say anything or even put any statements out because someone's going to take it that you hate them, that you're against them. What they want to see is people who know how to get along, to truly love one another. And Jesus said, that's what you're to be about. That's what you're to be about. Loving one another. And you can't love, we can't love each other if we're not in relationship. Love is not a feeling. Love is a verb. It's an action. So Jesus gives this command, and then we see the letters of the New Testament giving instruction to the church. And 59 times, listen, 59 times we have instruction to one another. Over and over it says, love one another. Love one another sincerely. And then on and on it goes with these instructions, such as, be at peace with one another. Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Honor one another. Serve one another. Bear one another's burdens. Oh, so many of us have come today with burdens. And sadly, many of us, we may leave here carrying them out. Wouldn't it be great if we had such an atmosphere, such an environment, such a level of trust that we could just take the mask off and say, I'm hurting. I need prayer. I don't need answers. I just need somebody to pray with me, just to know what's going on. That's what it tells us to do, to bear one another's burdens. But I can't bear your burden if I don't know what it is, nor can you bear mine. And that's why we need to move from rows to circles when we get together and we're connected more intimately and we have a level of trust and we can share with one another and do these one another's. Encourage one another. Confess your sins to one another. Spur one another on toward loving good deeds. On and on and on it goes. In fact, Andy Stanley said the primary activity of the early church was one anothering one another. So that's why we're talking about moving from rows to circles. It's easy for us to have the idea that church is about me and my needs, and I go there to have help, and maybe we have a staff of people like myself or pastors who will assist, but that's never going to work. That's never God's plan. God's plan is that we would minister to one another and love one another as Jesus loved us. So a simple reminder this morning, nothing new, profound for you, but I want to urge you to press in and to get involved in a group, whether it's a ministry team, whether it's a life group, whether it's some other place where you can gather and know others beyond the surface and be known and live out these one another's. So let me share three thoughts with you, just three things I'd urge you to do, and then I'll just quickly share with the story before we transition to communion. First of all, I just say simply, I think we need to pray, and I ask you to pray for the church. Pray for our church. We need God to move among us to help us to love one another. It's not natural and it's not easy. So we need God. God, would you come and move in our hearts, move in my heart. Help us to be a place that is known for your love. And secondly, I would say, examine yourself. Are there people that you know well and that know you? Are you in a circle? Or do you just come to church here? The only time you gather, you're in a row. Are there things in your life, is there something in your life that is perhaps inhibiting community for you or even for the church? Yeah, we're all busy, busy people. Sometimes we can use that as an excuse. And so I urge you to examine your life. Is there any way that you can remove something to make room to be part of a circle? Not just for your sake, but for the sake of others who need you. Examine your heart. And then finally, draw near to Christ. You see, ultimately, listen, this is the most important thing I want to say to you. Ultimately, when we talk about moving from rows to circles, if Jesus is in the center of the circle, it's pointless. Jesus is the center of the circle. So as we draw near to Jesus, he's going to change our hearts and move us and draw us together with one another. So they go together. So this morning I'm urging you to draw nearer to him and open your heart to drawing near to other people. A year or two ago, we had a missionary here, David Kindervater, from Japan. And he told a lot of things about, he shared with us a lot of things about that culture. Very modern, very positive in so many ways, but there's so much pressure on people that their culture is very stilted. In fact, did you know that you can rent a family in Japan? It's true. You can actually rent a family, pay somebody to function as your family. It started out as a good idea, but now, you know, you can rent a father, or even a boyfriend. You can rent an uncle or a child. And this started almost 30 years ago when a woman named Satsuki Ohiwa, she founded this company. She discovered that even in her own family, elderly people were becoming increasingly isolated because of the busyness of the younger people. So she wanted someone to be with her parents. And so she started this company. And for $1,130, you can have a surrogate family. And they'll come and ring your doorbell and they'll say, "Oh, I'm so glad to see you. It's so good to be home. Oh, so great to be together again. How are you doing? Is there any way I can help you?" And they'll do a little odd jobs around the house and they'll do whatever you want them to do. And they'll say, "Oh, man, we'll have to get together again." And they actually pay people to do that. And it would be comical, except for the fact that thousands of people have used the service. And now there are other companies that are doing it as well. Satsuki said, "What is common about our clients is that they are thirsty for love." They're thirsty for love. And my friends, there are people in this room right now who are thirsty for love. Just dying for it. And there are countless numbers of people all around us in the same boat. Jesus designed, he envisioned, he crafted, and he's building the church to function like a family. So I have good news for you. You don't have to rent a family. All you have to do is press in and move from rows to circles and connect deeply with other people and find your needs met and be what other people need. So will you move from rows to circles? Will you take a step forward? Will you get involved? Will you carve out some time to volunteer in some ministry or be part of a home group, a life group? My friends, that's what we need. We're going to experience all that God has for us. I'd like you to just take a moment and bow your head. We're going to pray, and in just a moment, Jason's going to come and lead us through a time of communion. But let's ask God to examine our hearts. Father, we're so thankful that you are the one who supplies all of our needs. And we thank you that in Jesus Christ, that longing in our hearts is met. And yet, God, we know that you made us to be in relationship with other people. And I pray for those here today, that one right now whose hearts may be skipping a few beats because they're just longing so much to be known by someone, to feel part of something, to feel connected to people beyond the surface. God, would you lead us as a church as we move forward and continue to live out your command to love one another? So God, would you open our hearts? Would you help us now as we draw near through communion? We're grateful for your provision. And we thank you that as we, even in this mock circle today, we have you, Jesus, as the center. And we turn our attention to you. And thank you for who you are and what you've done for us. It's in your name, Jesus, we pray.